Welcome back to Off World, the show where we talk about all things space exploration and pop culture. I'm Ariel Waldman.
And I'm Norm Chan. And Ariel, this week, you're doing something a little bit different. You and two guests are going to be discussing a film that just came out.
Yes, so this is definitely a major spoiler alert. So we are talking about First Man, the movie that is about Neil Armstrong and the space race and everything sort of leading up to the Apollo 11 moon landing.
And so you are joined by both Adam Savage and space historian Megan Prelinger for a fun discussion and review of First Man. Let's take a listen.
Today I'm with Tessa's very own Adam Savage, and also Megan Prelinger, space historian and co-leader of the Prelinger Library and Archives.
Thanks. Hi, Ariel.
Yeah, hey.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Yeah, well, so let's jump into First Man. So we all saw First Man fairly recently.
Yeah.
So let's just go into, did you like it? What did you like about it? If you liked it.
Liked it a lot, yeah.
I enjoyed the experience of watching it immensely. Mm-hmm.
So, like, what specific points, like, stuck out as you as, like, things that you really appreciated about it?
I really enjoyed how personal it was. I enjoyed that, you know, one of my favorite things about having visited NASA facilities and touching pieces of NASA hardware is that when you touch them, it's really clear that people made these things. Mm-hmm. And you can feel, there's not, it, unlike something like this, which shields you from knowledge of its creators, everything that NASA builds carries that narrative, and the movie really demonstrated that these were these tin cans these men were going up into space with, and it was scary and tenuous, and they helped me appreciate even more than I already knew that tenuousness by talking about its effect on a family, and yeah. I thought that was really great.
What I really liked about it was the way it kind of slowed down some stories that are so often skipped over in the lead up to Apollo 11, especially the emphasis on the Gemini 8 mission, which was in its own way just super exciting, and that they let that really play out and let a modern audience feel that excitement.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't know too much about Gemini 8 and,
no,
and that whole
it
experience.
Gets overlooked.
Yeah, and I feel like now it's actually even very recently relevant because a Soyuz capsule had an emergency sort of departure. It was only in space for a few seconds and mm-hmm. then had to mm-hmm. do an emergency landing. And when I saw that happening and having recently seen this film that, like, you hear the creaking of the metal and you hear, like, these sound effects that are amazing, but it really kind of shows you just, like, your, you know, for better or worse, you kind of are spam in a can, even with all the controls. And so even with modern-day spaceflight, you sort of, this movie gives you a feeling of what it's sort of like.
Mm-hmm.
I found the Gemini 8 sequence absolutely exhausting.
Oh, really?
I really was like, I needed a glass of water when it was over. It was so intense because it went on for so long. Mm-hmm. The idea of what these, like, each of the sequences where difficulties happened, they really, like you said, they took their time kind of really letting you feel what it was like.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so one of my favorite parts of the movie was just like little moments that sort of contextualized what it was like to live through that period that I think oftentimes space movies have overlooked. So, for instance, they, you know, show a lot of interviews with, you know, American citizens at the time saying, I don't know why we're spending all this money and, you know, I don't know why we're doing this. And then you also see a sequence where people are doing a song about, you know, Whitey's on the moon, but we've got all these problems here on Earth. And I actually, you know, appreciated those little moments because a lot of people oftentimes think that this was this golden age of spaceflight where everyone was behind it. But mm-mm. the polling data no. doesn't, you know, as no, a historian, especially. The polling data doesn't mm-hmm. actually support that.
No, the research science community editorialized against it.
Wow.
Throughout the 1960s. And it's amazing to go back and read that and then just be heightens the consciousness of how much people's minds were opened and changed by the Apollo program. Mm.
Yeah.
But everything that happens before that is often remembered differently. And I think this movie's a great contribution to kind of public memory of that time.
Yeah.
With those elements included.
Yeah, I think it's really important because, so it's like if you look at a lot of data over the years. So people get really positive about Apollo as more time goes on. Mm-hmm. So people get really nostalgic and say, oh, this program was totally worth it, totally awesome. But during it actually happening, they weren't very mm-hmm. supportive. And you sort of see that same trend with the space shuttle and everything else, that over time, people have a more fond memory of what was happening than they did actually when they were living through it.
In the New York Times this morning, there was an article about whether it's pronounced Gemini or Gemini, and yes. the movie gives you both. But one of the things I appreciated about the beginning of the article is they talked about the Gemini program as the middle child of the American space program, oft ignored and really trying to please. And yeah, there was I didn't know about Gemini 8. I didn't know that that had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if there's one thing that I missed in Ryan Gosling's wonderful performance, it's that in all the pictures of Neil Armstrong at those times, he seems like a baby to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he looks so cherubic. He has those rosy cheeks of his.
Yeah, well, so other things that were brought up that were sort of context in for Gemini were things about how the USSR had been beating America every step of the way, so that America essentially moved the goalposts so that everyone could start from scratch and essentially do a do-over on a lot of things. And I thought, you know, again, these are just like tiny little moments in the movie, but again, things that people often overlook. The fact that, you know, they were getting to do spacewalks before we were, they were getting humans into space before we were. Mm-hmm. So you sort of see that pressure at little slivers in this film. Oh, which was cool. So we did also ask some Twitter followers for questions as well for us to tackle. So I'll be going over some of those. Let's see. So first up, we had Nick Brockwell and McNasty Prime on Twitter.
This is classic.
Yeah, totally. They asked us, well, they said that they were curious about how they approached the sound effects for the film. I mean, so what did you think about the sound? Because I feel like the sound itself is like an actor in this movie.
It's fantastic. It's one of the best executed elements of the film.
And I appreciated how, again, like we've been talking about, it took its time, and it really took its time to let these soundscapes surround you. And that makes it a, you know, we have The Right Stuff and we have Apollo 13, both great movies that are very different from each other. And this is, I think, a major entrant that is also different than those two.
Mm-hmm.
And demonstrating different aspects of really physicalizing that experience of what it was like for the astronauts. All those sounds of the creaking of their vessels
was really great.
Terrifying.
Yeah. So I don't know where the creaking sounds came from, but the rocket sounds. So both for the Saturn V and for the X-15 moments, what they actually did for this movie was they put microphones on the recent Falcon Heavy launch, SpaceX's Falcon Heavy launch that was earlier this year. They put microphones on that. So both the Saturn V launch, those sounds are you're hearing a Falcon Heavy, and then also the X-15 when it does the sonic boom, that's the sonic boom from the Falcon Heavy.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. It's just like...
That's what their hyper-realism comes from.
There's that famous NASA close-up slow-mo footage of the Saturn V, the bottom of the Saturn V mm-hmm. igniting, and you watch the flame go back mm-hmm. in, and then the rocket starts to take off. And I watched it again. I'm getting chills just describing it. I watched it again recently and was confronted with the same thing I've always felt looking at that footage, which is once the flame of the rocket appears, my brain can't really resolve what I'm seeing because mm-hmm. the film is... It's so other, the amount of raw power coming out of it. It feels almost dreamlike to me. And it was the one thing I missed in this movie was that it's almost like this demon shooting out from the bottom of this. It looks so weird to me.
Yeah.
It was really clear that Chazelle infused himself with all of these physical aspects about how difficult and what NASA went through to lift these things up.
Yeah.
But it was more of a personal narrative film. I mean, it was a biopic, and consistent with that, the kind of technological immersive feature was the interior of the space capsules in both Gemini and Apollo. And more than other space films, I felt like this film gave the viewer a real sense of enclosure within those spaces, like you're really with the astronauts and that was appropriate because we've seen a lot of fiery liftoffs in other films, and it's like okay to kind of broaden that technological horizon in the film.
Yeah, well, I heard from a number of people talking about the claustrophobic nature of these capsules.
Exactly.
That really came through more so than any other movie. Mm-hmm. And so I started showing them. I'm like, check out how claustrophobic it is in these like modern Soyuz capsules that that all our astronauts and cosmonauts lately are still using.
Yeah.
It's almost even more claustrophobic in these Soyuz capsules. But just giving people that idea, because I think a lot of times in space films, whether they're accurate and they're portraying the International Space Station, or they're sci-fi and they're portraying spaceships that we don't have.
These very expansive ballrooms in space.
Yeah, where you get to float around. And it's like, they're just squeezed right in there. And that, I think it was good. And so how do you feel as like a historian sort of watching this and sort of like how this sort of, helps the general population sort of understand things that were going on? Like, I feel like as a historian, you can pick apart what's accurate and not, but there's also, how much this film is sort of giving to us.
Yeah, in terms of communicating history to the public, I think where it's most exciting is in the mission histories. And I think it's a really nice combination of using one person's life story as a window onto those mission histories. It's kind of funny to, in a way, as a historian, to pair Gemini and Apollo in one film rather than breaking them out into their own features. But then, again, there's probably not going to be a Gemini feature, so it's great that it's bundled in with that and that you see it in this very, very personal way through the life story of Armstrong. So I thought that was good.
Yeah,
a nice balance between program history and personal history.
I hope there is one day a Gemini film.
I want to see it.
That footage of Ed White's first spacewalk is up there to me with Kittinger's jump as just the loneliest bit of exploration I can parse out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
I also really appreciated, as a biopic, the partnership between Neil and his wife. We were talking about this on the podcast yesterday, and Will Smith felt like he was not a great dad and not a great husband, as the film portrays.
Well, Will was a little critical of it, yeah.
But I appreciated Claire Foy's performance, and I appreciated what I felt was like a well-balanced partnership, even though it was within the restrictions of 60s culture and all of that entails. I felt like there felt to me like there was some good balance there.
There was, but he was kind of drifting away from them. And there's a sense of like the astronaut psychically being carried away a bit from his family. And you really see and feel that while he stays a very real person at the same time.
Yeah. Well, I think it's worth noting. So this film, for those that don't know, is based off of the only authorized biography of Neil Armstrong. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing to know. And then also his sons were advisors on this movie and approved of the movie and very much approved of the working relationship with the production. Because from what I heard, the movie production did change a lot of things based on his son's advising of getting things accurate and everything. And they felt that more than most movies, they really listened to them and actually like incorporated their feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting because you do have so much family is like, I feel like the film is like 80% family with these then action sequences sort of sliced in between.
Jump is a family.
And also the filmmakers must have looked at the Life magazine feature series on the Gemini 8 mission that did where the Life magazine photographers went into the Armstrong household and photographed Janet, with head down at the box. In life, I went and looked at it yesterday.
Her son holding on to the microphone was the most.
Oh yeah,
that is exactly what a child would do.
Yes,
right. I'm going to protect you from this.
Oh my God. Yeah. So we did get a lot of questions also from Twitter about the accuracy of the film. So I believe, let's see, Twitter users Matt Wosky, Jesse underscore Wynn, DCVII all asked us about the accuracy of these interpersonal relationships. But then skipping ahead, they also asked us about the accuracy of the bracelet drop. So before getting into the accuracy of that, which I can talk a little bit about, what did you think about this scene? So, you know, he gets... Neil Armstrong gets to the moon. Yeah, well, hey, Megan, you go first. Like, yeah. What did you think? You know, Neil Armstrong gets to the moon. He's finally there. He's at the edge of a crater, and he's got his bracelet from his daughter, who is deceased, and just, you know, throws it into the crater, much like the end scene of Titanic.
What was really good about this film is all the parts of it, which is almost all of it, where it was not very emotionally manipulative of the audience. And then there was that scene.
They had to bring one home.
I'm in your camp. It felt like a tying up a loose end that didn't need tying up.
No, I mean that. Mm-hmm. There's enough drama in what really happened, and I mean, even if I don't know if that really happened or not, but whether it did or didn't, it's kind of I felt it was superfluous and unmanipulative.
I will say, going back to accuracy, Ryan Nagata, who built a Gemini suit behind us, said that as he was working with the filmmakers, they absolutely absorbed and appreciated and wanted all the esoterica he understood. Mm-hmm. So when they had boots built for Gosling's X-15 suit, they had one too few lace holes in the boot, which no one would ever know or count. But when Ryan saw their boots, he had another pair made that had one extra lace hole in it. And Ryan Gosling is wearing those in one of the exterior scenes because Ryan Nagata wanted the boots to be super accurate. And he, according to him, the production team was right with him in that.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to get into spacesuits. So let's, on the bracelet drop thing first. So from what I read about this film, so essentially... You see in the film, each astronaut is allowed to take their own personal effects, essentially, mm-hmm. to the moon with them. And what the movie production people said was that they knew that Neil Armstrong had brought some personal effects with him to the moon, that those items were not necessarily logged as to what they were, and that we know that Neil did go off comms for about 20 minutes while he was on the moon, supposedly to go look at a crater. So we know those two things are true. Okay. And so then they like...
Seems like a big extrapolation.
Yeah. So they were like, it could have happened. We don't know. He went off comms and no one knows what he did for those 20 minutes. And we know he had personal stuff with him on the moon. Uh-huh. So that was at least their reasoning behind
it. Maybe he, cast a spell.
Yeah. I mean, for that scene... Because I'm a nerd, I was just like, no, planetary protection, that bracelet has bacteria on it, don't ruin it.
Totally. And right, what are the archaeologists going to do with that?
I know.
And you know that once we have a base on the moon, people are going to go out to that crater and pan for the bracelet. Right.
I think it's the thing where it's like, you know, I get for the emotional like feeling of the movie, but, you know, Neil Armstrong's such a by-the-book engineer, and that's what this film absolutely communicates. And so the idea that he would be like, throw a bracelet into a crater. Kind of doesn't fit the personality that they build up, but
I did really appreciate when he's thinking to himself after a difficult moment, and he's approached, and he says, "Do you think I've walked out into the backyard of my house at night because I want to talk to somebody?"
Right. That was a good moment. Mm-hmm. But let's briefly talk about the spacesuit stuff, since Adam, I know
the detailed close-ups of spacesuits were very enjoyable to me throughout, including the sound effects of wrist rings and neck rings.
A lot of
connecting.
Spacesuit porn, essentially. Yeah. Like close-ups of like seeing how everything interlocks and a lot of like grime on different things.
Ryan Nagata told me that he learned a lot from film production about how much weathering really is necessary to make something look like it's been used. Mm-hmm. He was shocked at how much the production was adding moon dust to the gloves that he'd built. And I also know that Chris Gilman from Global Effects, who supplied the most of the suits in the film, has made many of his neck rings actually functional And they were clearly using some of those functional illuminative parts in the film.
Yeah. So wrapping up here a little bit, getting into, I guess, where this film sort of sits in our portfolio of space movies, both sci-fi and realistic. Sort of, you know, Megan, what do you think about where this film sits amidst, you know, Right Stuff and Gravity and Hidden Figures and, you know, other films that are out there? Like, do you feel like this adds its own thing that didn't already exist?
Mm, definitely. I think it's right in step with Hidden Figures in being such a personal kind of hyper-real portrayal of the time. And that, again, it's like a useful intervention to... in a way, it both emphasizes Apollo and contextualizes it in a bigger frame of reference than is often offered to the public, and that's one of its biggest strengths.
Yeah, new cultural, I mean, yeah, a reminder.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, the idea of, not to hammer on Gem 8, but the idea of the docking in space kind of became publicly significant in the 70s with Apollo Soyuz. And here's a bit of history for people who are thinking, like, maybe docking is they only first really thought about it in Apollo Soyuz context, and here's this different backstory. So lots of different, I think, useful backstories, and also to span the gap between the Mercury 7 and the Apollo crew, and to see how those crews connect and, over time.
Yeah. What do you think about where this sort of sits in the portfolio of space movies that we already have?
I really appreciate how personal it is. I to me, it communicates on a physical level that other movies haven't quite been able to communicate. Again, just how tenuous it was, how much the astronauts were active engineers, the piloting. I mean, the sequence from Apollo 13 of Lovell steering is amazing and wonderful. I feel like this movie has like five times as much intense piloting sequences of showing just how much these guys really had to understand. They were so much farther along than spam in a can.
I think it's something where also you see a lot of sort of space hacker nature of like in the film, because you see, you know, when Neil Armstrong joins NASA, he doesn't already know everything. He has to like take propulsion classes, and you see them, you know, sort of using Swiss Army knives to like fix different problems. And you know, I feel like this film does a better job than a lot of other films of showing that, you know, they didn't necessarily always know what they were doing. And you see Jan sort of rail against them about, you know, they act like they know what they're doing, but they're not. And I really appreciated those moments.
And you agree with her, right?
Yeah.
There's something you said that called up something in my head.
Space hackers.
Wow, I totally just lost my train of thought.
Space hackers, Swiss Army knives, people not knowing what they were doing.
Oh, I really appreciate
the improvisational nature of the program.
The
work. All the improvisational nature of the program work, and improvisation on all levels by all the participants.
And you realize it works because of that,
not in spite of it, exactly.
I really appreciated the moment in Gemini 8 when they docked that the two astronauts then shared that little moment of like, just happened.
Yeah.
Right? They've got past all the really, they have this little moment to share. And then they're back to work. That was really, you can imagine that's happened so many times. And that's such a deeply little personal thing.
Yeah. I really feel, you know, in summary about the film, that it does that good job of showing this very surreal stuff with this very everyday life. You know, you have this family life, you're doing all this, and then before you know it, you're on the moon. And it's both surreal and it's just your job at the same time, and how weird that is. Mm-hmm. So, well, with that, I think we could keep talking forever, but I'll leave it there for that. And you know, just I think we're all in agreement. It's a great film. People should definitely check it out.
I hope it's successful, because I'd like more like it.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for being on the show.
Thanks
for having us.
So we had a great conversation, I feel. We got into a lot of the different details of the context of history and sort of what we felt about the scenes and the sound and sort of the physical feeling of the film and how that sort of gives us a better idea, both personally and sort of broadly as a culture, as to what was going on during these missions.
Totally. It was really fun to listen to you three as space geeks appreciate not only the technical aspects, which I assume that you guys would all appreciate, but also the personal story and how that elevated the drama of the technical challenges of these missions. And it became very clear that Gemini, or Gemini, as it's pronounced at NASA and in the film, well underrepresented in film and popular media, and something that all three of you really enjoyed.
Absolutely. And, you know, something we didn't get into was just, yeah, the drama of all the way that this was shot. So we talked a little bit about the sound, but also the visuals. And so, you know, there's a shaky cam and you have film grain and you've got the color grading and everything in this film that is really trying to embed you constantly with actually feeling like what it was like to actually be there.
And embed you in a medium that was used in the 60s, you know, film, even though they're using presumably digital cameras and IMAX cameras to film so much of this movie. I think it was very clear that Damien Chazelle and his cinematographer tried to, at least in the homestead scenes, make it look like home movies, which let the actors just perform the scenes and let you feel like you were there.
Yeah. So I think this film overall, as we said at the end of our discussion, you know, I absolutely recommend it. I think it's a solid, solid film. You saw it and you also.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hopefully out there you've watched it as well. And I know we didn't cover every single aspect of this film. There would be so much to dissect. But let us know out there what you liked about the film, whether it's from a movie's perspective or a space geek perspective. And post your thoughts and comments in the comments section below. And we'll see you next time.